This is a summary of a sicha given by Rav Amital to Parshas Devarim. I apologize if there's a bit of a sound echo. I'm driving and recording in a safe fashion with a speaker. And it's very characteristic of Rav Amital's belief in the eternal relevance of Torah. It's a word that was one of the five words that I almost directly and constantly affiliate or associate with Rav Amital. I could hear him saying the word so often, relevantiot, relevantiot, the desire to take Torah and integrate it and append it to reality rather than cloister it and create an alternate reality, which, quite frankly, is what I believe stands behind the strategy that's behind many other people's approach to Torah. One could say the Haredi world is trying to and successfully creating an alternative reality, different dress, different language, cloistered culture, different set of ground rules, and it's a whole separate approach. But Rav Amital's approach was the conviction and the perseverant belief that Torah has an answer to everything and is relevant despite the fads of time. He had historical confidence and poise. He wasn't easily swayed by trends. I remember whenever I point out a trend to him in worldwide Jewry or American Jewry, it'd always be that sense, well, things come and go, and things or trends are cyclical. Just because a certain reality exists now doesn't mean it will unfold. I'm not sure how frequently people think in those terms. People think in terms of trajectories and vectors rather than circles and cycles. In any event, he spoke about always, and this is, I'm reading off of a sheet now, remembering the sicha, but if you ask me just to recall a sicha I gave on Devarim, this would be immediate. Ha'il Moshe bi'eres ha'Torah zos. Moshe translated the Torah into 70 languages. Why would Moshe translate Torah into all 70 languages? So for many of us, it strikes at the universalism of Torah, which is in and of itself an important message, that Torah is meant to be at some level studied by every single culture, and its values and ideals are meant to be lifted and applied, and hence it must be translated. And this highlights a very important question, not for the context of this year: why was the translation of the Torah into Septuagint, why was it such a sad and depressing day? Didn't Moshe translate the Torah? But that's a whole different question. For Rav Amital, the translation wasn't linguistic to extend it to other cultures for them to study, but was also symbolic. That whatever ideas cultures would pose towards Judaism, and they would pose challenges, Judaism, Torah has an answer, and it's eternal. And the translation in 70 languages is not just pragmatic so that every language can study Torah, it suggests the encompassing relevance and the eternal, undying, and enduring relevance of Torah that it can answer in every language. It can speak the language of the generation. It can respond. Rav Amital spoke about this a lot on Hanukkah, and he didn't connect this in the Sicha on Devarim, but this is one of the theses of the Maharal, that inevitably Torah always is clashing with major empires. Torah is never being challenged by minor players on the historical stage. It's the Nebuchadnezzars of the world, and the Romans, and the Persians, and the communists, and the Christians, and the Muslims, pretty much everyone. And these clashes are not just clashes of peoples or of territories, they're clashes of ideas. And every culture poses certain ideas and challenges, and sometimes it's by moral lacunas or moral deficiencies that Judaism has to fill with moral meaning, and sometimes it's competing or conflicting systems, certainly in the case of the Greeks. And history is evolutionary, and at every stage Judaism improves, and Torah improves anthropology and human history by, to a degree, defeating these challenges, but also by integrating their redeeming elements and contributing to the human geist and the unfurling of the human spirit, but in a way that is streamed through the beauty of Torah. That's a short summary of what the Maharal describes, and it's certainly something very relevant and germane to Hanukkah. This is how Rav Amital saw Torah, as providing an answer to every challenge, and it was a particularly meaningful statement in the post-Holocaust era, where people assumed, certainly in America for some reasons, in the Western civilization, because of the melting pot cultural pressures that seemed to be suffocating any religious passion, and in Israel because of the ardent and antagonistic anti-religious agenda of the ruling secular parties, people really thought that Torah
would die a generation or two after the Holocaust, and it would remain in those ancient shtetlach in Europe, but has no relevance to the modern streets of Manhattan or the kibbutz plains of secular Zionism. And of course, Torah, as always, proved itself and is enduring. And the translation into 70 languages for Rav Amital was reflective. And just to show you Rav Amital's sweep, again, he didn't quote a Maharal in this year, but he would always quote the Maharal on Hanukkah. But in this year, he quoted a Chidushi Harim, the grandfather of the Sfas Emes. And I found that most of the Chidushi Harims that Rav Amital quoted for us were not revelatory or revolutionary, but they just affirmed ideas that we had heard from him or could arrive on our own, but couch them or frame them in ways that were very creative and memorable. So when the Torah writes, Binu Shnos Dar Vadar, in Parshas Hazinu, you should study the annals of history, Zachor Yemos Olam, Binu Shnos Dar Vadar, it seems to be a bit repetitive. If you're studying the annals of history, you're also understanding the differences between generations. And for the Chidush Harim, it meant understand each unique challenge in each generation and how it challenged Yiddishkeit, how it challenged Torah, and how Torah both, I would say, defeated but perfected and cleansed or filtered some of those ideas. Now, interestingly enough, and to show you Rav Amital's power of metaphor and allegory, Rav Amital saw this in a different issue, in an even more concrete fashion. Parshas Devarim begins with very specific GPS tags, as we would say, where Moshe stood, very specific timetable, and a very specific period. Which day of the month, which day of the year, which year it was, where they were standing, at what stage in the Jewish history after defeating certain kings and certain kingdoms. Why is it so relevant and so important to know the specific date, time, chapter, location? Waste of so many words. Rashi notes this, of course, and for Rashi, these are all allusions, and Moshe is softly critiquing the Jewish people by mentioning the places and the locations where they erred and where they rebelled. But the simple pshat, and the Rashbam assumes this, is that it's just tagging and framing the conversation. And for Rav Amital, this reflected that every conversation has to be anchored in the reality and in the context, and no two contexts will be identical, and hence the language of each conversation will be very different. And Moshe, by delivering Torah to us, is quietly suggesting that context and timetable and historical framework are extremely important, because if Torah is meant to be relevant and to respond, then it also, and again I use the word because Rav Amital used it very often, and maybe in today's conversation it's no longer PC, but I want to convey to you Rav Amital, he felt that Torah can't be autistic, it can't be severed from its social interaction. So it's almost as if it's a message that sounds dichotomous, and for many people it's dichotomous. On the one hand, Torah is eternal and has eternal relevance and eternal truths, and therefore it's context independent. On the other hand, if it is intended to comment and remark on different periods, then it has to be adapted, if not in content, at least in style and language, to the particulars of the situation. And that's what made, I think, Rav Amital such an enigmatic and engaging person, because it goes back to something I've talked about so often in Rav Amital, the traditionalism and the novelty, and it was just so seamless for him, and it taught us to try to appreciate each of those values. And just to show you how broad his conversations were with us, and how I think complex his view of history, I don't say complex in the academic sense, but integrated and holistic, he would talk to us about the two great conflicts between Judaism and human systems of the 20th century. And of course, the two great clashes was the obvious clash between communism and Judaism occurring and unfolding in the Soviet Union. But of course, there was a quieter clash between democracy and Judaism and Torah. And Rav Amital remarked about almost the contradictory nature of these clashes, that Judaism and Torah were fighting different battles, in many ways inverted battles at once. The battle with democracy, because democracy suggests that man has no higher authority to which he should succumb or submit, and the only system and the only rationale or justification for submission is the protection of rights. So I have to maintain the law so that my rights are protected, and the entire
community of people's rights are protected. So obviously I've got to sacrifice my own personal liberties for the better, greater welfare, but in turn a better welfare or a greater commonwealth, which enriches my life and my life and protects my rights. And Judaism and Torah prove that man does have a higher authority, or certainly asserts that, to which he should submit his own will, even without receiving compensation or reciprocity. Communism, on the other hand, suggested a very different ideal. It allowed that man should submit to authority, but not the authority of God. It was an atheist-based culture. And the authority that man should submit to was the authority of man, or of the party, or of the leadership. And in many ways, it was closer to Judaism because it presupposed submission, but it redirected submission to human beings rather than to God or to a divine figure. And how can Torah defeat both at once? Or not defeat, but contend with and wrestle with two vastly different systems, but it just suggests and it implies or it reflects the flexibility of Torah, that it's so relevant in a holistic sense that it can almost contend with two such almost inverted systems and suggest that man can submit, and that submission to be should be to a divine other.